This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
From KMOX Sports.
Here's the pitch. A swing and a high fly ball.
This could be trouble. It's at the wall.
And it's a gunner!
Welcome to the Lux Calor International Sports on a Sunday morning.
Oh, yeah!
On America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
I'm Tom Ackerman on Facebook Live on the KMOX Sports Facebook page every Thursday at 5:30. It's my Garage Happy Hour. This week was Joe Buck. Here's a little bit more.
So a week from today, they're going to announce the name, the colors, and the crest of the new MLS team. Carolyn Kendall Betts was on this show 2 weeks ago and talked about it, and I couldn't be happier about this. I mean, St. Louis needs this, doesn't it, Joe? Needs a little boost.
Anytime that people like us, this is my experience in my 51 years, and being my dad's son, he got it when he was hawking the new ballpark for the Cardinal owners, when this current version of Busch Stadium was being talked about in Jeff City, and he actually got booed. I think one of the first times, or maybe the only time, he ever got booed in his life when he was talking about, you know, why the Cardinals needed a new stadium, and people on the other side of the state were like, get out of here. We're not paying for anything. And as we know, you know, they didn't get a lot of, I don't think they got it really any state money, if at all. So anytime people like us talk about, well, we need another sports team, people just automatically go, oh, shut up. You know, this money should be used for education. And who's against education? Nobody. But I think, you know, having that family, the Taylor family, and having this downtown and creating more jobs and building another facility and getting more tax dollars coming through and having concerts and having people, I just think that that helps our overall profile. And I look at other cities that have really done a lot to improve their own downtowns and in many ways have surpassed what St. Louis has done over the past 20, 30 years. And I'm talking about Indianapolis that's hosted a Super Bowl. I mean, think about that. And where they were 30 years ago. And I mean, what was the difference between St. Louis and Indianapolis? St. Louis is probably ahead of Indianapolis, and they've hosted a Super Bowl, or Cincinnati, or my God, Cleveland, even downtown, and the stadiums that they've built, and the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. So, yeah, I think these things are good, and they generate interest, they generate attention, they get people excited, they make people feel good, and they generate tax dollars and jobs, and I just think it's a great thing. So I'm all for what they're doing down there.
I think it's awesome, and I just love how, you know, eventually when this does lift and when we get back together, it'll be an emotional time. St. Louis sports means so much to us. I was just taking a sip here out of my – this is the PGA glass from Valhalla.
Valhalla? Where's your Bell Reeve?
I know. Right. Well, there's the – right above
the washer?
That's the Bell Reeve right there.
Yeah, that's see it.
Anyway.
Very nice.
But I was thinking about the response that day. And that first day where the players are like, what is going on? This is a practice round, and the play and people were everywhere all the way through, where Tiger Woods said it was a pleasure to play in front of them. I wish we could do this every week. St. Louis just responds. So that moment when we do get soccer, professional soccer, and we do have one, St. Louis FC does a fine job. But when the moment when we can get fans back, period, whether it's an MLS game in 2023 or a Blues game, whatever that happens, or a Cardinals game, St. Louis will respond in an amazing way. And I do look forward to the day where you have three stadiums and then you can add the dome just north. Who knows what's going to happen there? All downtown and all playing almost at the same time.
Yeah. I think when sports comes back, and I've been talking about this for the past 4 months, I'm smart enough to know not everybody's a sports fan, especially, you know, across this country. But I do know that anybody that lives in the United States understands that sports is a big part of our daily life. And so when it was gone, there was a huge void. And I missed it more just as a fan. I missed watching Blues games. I missed just being able to plop down on the couch and watch Dan and Al or whoever he's doing games with just call the Cardinals games. It's comforting. And so whenever this stuff starts to trickle back in and fans and they're in stadiums, this is a nice stepping stone, what we have now, and hopefully it continues and, you know, we can get past the health issues that have plagued the Cardinals in particular and the Marlins even worse. But it'll be an emotional return, and I'm with you. St. Louis always responds. I think it's one of the most philanthropic, giving communities in this country. And whenever there's an event, people come in droves, and it's good for the morale of our city. It's good for the way people feel about our city from the outside looking in. And when Tiger says that kind of stuff, I don't think he throws around stuff that he doesn't mean. So I know he meant what he said, and it was just awesome. I was out there on Wednesday at the practice round and actually talked to him as he was teeing off with Koepka. I was there to say hi to Koepka because of our intertwined history and his girlfriend, Jenna Sims. And I walked a bunch of holes with her, by the way, when I messed up her name at the end of the U.S. Open at Erin Hills. But Tiger was blown away even then. I mean, people were 5, 6, 7 deep just at the practice round. It's like, I've never seen anything like this. So that was legit. St. Louis always delivers. And I can't wait to hear a real roar of fans back in a stadium somewhere.
I was watching Tiger this morning. He made a birdie putt from about 33, 34 feet on the fourth hole that he played. Second birdie in four holes to come out firing. And I was like, yeah, you know, in the KMOX sports office. And it hit me. There's no gallery. There was nothing. Like, he makes this amazing putt, and it's just silence. Like,
who's doing the PGA Championship? Who televised?
ESPN Plus was doing it. So they had McDonough. Van Pelt was the host.
But who does it on the weekend, CBS or NBC?
CBS. Yeah.
Yeah. CBS. So if nowhere else, every executive at CBS was going, yeah! Come on, Tiger, let's go. I mean, be honest. I mean, network executives are guilty of what everybody always accuses me of, which is being for and against every team in America. They're the ones that are Tiger fans and Yankee fans and Cub fans and Dodger fans and Packer fans and Cowboy fans, because it changes the bottom line. When those teams or individuals are thriving and playing when it matters the most, that's when they make the most amount of money on the rights fees that they pay crazy numbers for. So believe me, everybody at CBS, forget ESPN, they're going to televise it no matter what. CBS was cheering with Tiger getting off to a good start.
Oh, I guarantee you. Is that a new challenge for you in your career? And how have you prepared and thought about how long this will go, but how do you do that without fans? Fans are a big part of you, especially on TV, because the fans kind of, you're great at stepping back and letting them kind of own it for a while.
Yeah, there's nothing better, I think, than just, especially on TV. It's different if you're doing it on radio. It's different if you're doing it for a team. But when you're doing it for a network and it's on TV, getting out of the way and letting people on their couch hear how crazy the crowd is making noise or not, sometimes silence is just deafening. I think that's part of my job. So it's terrible without having fans. Thankfully, I've done one game. That's it since this all started back up. And I was in Denver because we were visiting my wife's mom. Smoltz was in Jersey. Our producer and director were in L.A. And we had whoever was doing the crowd. I wrote it down in my scorebook, which is not in this room right now, but I said it a bunch of times on the broadcast. a genius, was riding those levels. And so we were doing the game in D.C., and a Yankee pitcher threw over to first base, and without hesitation, he potted up, as we say in the business. So there was just a noise of a smattering of boos, which is what would have happened from a D.C. or a Nationals crowd. And it was so dead on. The timing was perfect. Our crowd sounded better than what I had heard on other networks. I was really proud. And I'm not saying that I have nothing to do with that. I'm just there and kind of benefiting from it, because I came back to where we were staying in Denver, and my wife was like, my God, it sounded like normal. And a lot of these games haven't sounded normal. So it's what I said from the beginning, Tom, is you need somebody in that spot that is like a conductor and almost like a maestro, who can just be realistic with the crowd noise, who's listened to the crowd noise and smartly puts it in at the appropriate time at the appropriate level. And we have that person. So I'm excited for that if this does continue on into the fall. I mean, who knows what football is going to be like when they kick off in the first part of September.
Yeah, no idea. You know, I know you get the question a lot, you know, how long until they do this, or how long can they play? Or, you know, I give the same answer. Like, I was trying to get to tomorrow, and I've kind of felt the same way since March 12th when Claves and I were calling a spring training game, and they finished the game, and they said, that's it. And like, okay, so what happens tomorrow? And I think every day has sort of been the same. I just, you know.
Every day I wake up. Because these days bedtime's earlier out here with 2-year-old twin boys. And I just go right to my phone, and the first thing I'm looking for, you know, obviously other than something that's really world changing, is let's make sure there's no, you know, outbreak yet again, or another team, or more Marlins, or more, you know, more games are pulled off the schedule. And that's just the, now, they've said from day one, the virus will tell us when it's okay to go back. I think they're doing their very best to make it happen. They have a lot of reasons to fight through this thing and get to the postseason, and I'm right there with them. But, you know, what can you do? This virus has no boundaries, and if there's another big outbreak, you know, I don't know how they handle it.
I'm Tom Ackerman. More with Joe Buck from My Garage Happy Hour right after this.
From KMOX Sports.
Here's the pitch. Welcome back to the Lux Calor International Sports on a Sunday morning. On America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
Every Thursday at 5:30 on the KMOX Sports Facebook page and also on the KMOX Sports Twitter account, we have a celebrity in my garage for a little conversation. I'm Tom Ackerman. This week it was Joe Buck.
One more thing before we go. So I do want to talk about that great piece of hardware over your head, the Emmy. But also, you were named National Sportscaster of the Year, and you've won multiple Emmys. And I know that the stretch, my sense is, the stretch that you have from baseball to the World Series, through the NFL playoffs, through the Super Bowl, has to be, I know it's your job, and you care, and you love it and passionate, but I know that has to be exhausting and tiring. What is that? How special was that to start being honored in that way and recognized for the excellence that you put out there?
Well, they say you'll never forget your first. And the first time I won, I just remember being nominated and being in a category with Al Michaels and Costas and Nance. And I don't even know, honest to God, who was in the category the first year that I actually won. But the beauty of it was that my dad was there in New York in front of all these TV execs. And my dad had two really tough years at CBS at the end of his career, CBS TV, doing the World Series with Tim. And it was just not a pleasant experience. And so he gets the Lifetime Achievement Award, the Lifetime Emmy. And my mom's there. My wife's there. My best friend was living in New York. He's there. And I have that picture somewhere, if I can find it. But, yeah, it's over here. But here, I'll grab it real quick.
Yeah, grab it. Oh, yeah, we definitely have to see that.
So, I mean, that's it. So I don't want to make it.
Yeah.
But, so, I don't know if it was, I guess it was like 2000 or 2001. But to see the look on his face when his kid won this national play-by-play award, like nothing will ever touch that. So I don't care. Any honor will never be better than that. To have everybody there, it was important to me. And to see him see me win in that big room, so to speak, after that, it just doesn't ever measure up. So it's nice, but I got to tell you, the year I had a paralyzed vocal cord, which was 2011, that's the last time I won an Emmy. And, you know, that's whatever it was, 9 years ago. It was the worst broadcast year of not just of my life. It was the worst broadcast year of anybody's life on national TV. I could barely talk. And because David Fries hit a home run and I said, we'll see you tomorrow night, and they ended up winning game 7, I won an Emmy. So what does that mean? It doesn't mean anything. It's kind of silly. But the first time was not. And to be able to celebrate that with him and everybody is, you know, nothing will ever measure up to that. So I'm probably done winning Emmys. It's not why I do it, but I do get a great sense of satisfaction of leaving a Wednesday playoff or World Series game, doing a Thursday night football game, coming back and doing the next game in the playoff baseball series. It's a challenge, but I love challenges, and I love the two guys I work with on air and many people behind the scenes, and it's just fun to do. So I'm lucky. I never work a day in my life because I'm doing what I love.
Do you hear, do you feel his presence, your dad, at times? Do you hear things that he would say to you?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, and I see looks on one of my, the twin boys, Blake, who looks most like me of the two. I see looks on his face, and I'm like, whoa, that looked a lot like my dad in a weird way. I feel like he's always around me, if not in a story that somebody tells me or working with somebody in a broadcast booth that worked with him back in the day. Or just a thought that I have of something he told me when I was starting out, or, you know, the best thing was he didn't hover over me. He didn't helicopter parent me. He didn't do any of that stuff. He just let me be. And that's what made us as close as we were once we started working together. And, while I knew always that he was beyond proud, he didn't bombard me with that stuff, so I didn't always feel like I was trying to measure up to a Hall of Fame announcer every time I opened my mouth. I just did what I did, and then eventually, you know, Fox came along and good things started to happen.
And the rest is history. Joe Buck, one of the best to do it, joining me in my garage happy hour. You can see that full video. It's about 36, 37 minutes on our KMOX Sports Facebook page. Really appreciate him joining us and making that guest list even better. When we come back, we will talk to John Mozeliak, the Cardinals president of baseball operations, scheduled to join us at his usual time of 11:30. I'm Tom Ackerman. Sports on a Sunday morning continues right after this.
From KMOX Sports.
Here's the pitch. Welcome back to the Lux Calor International Sports on a Sunday morning. On America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
Tiger Woods just birdied his second hole in a row, 2-under through the first 5 holes today in the PGA Championship. He's back to even par. Got a long way to chase Dustin Johnson, who starts today at 9-under. We'll talk to Dan Reardon about that at 11:45. Joining us now is the Cardinals president of baseball operations, John Mozeliak. Every Sunday at 11:30, he joins us, and we can't thank him enough. I know that in any other circumstance, you'd probably not only be getting ready for a game, but you'd probably catch some of that PGA Championship and relax a little bit. But this has, I know, been a stressful time for you, John, and thank you so much for being with us.
Yeah, good morning. You would have thought when we traveled back on Wednesday that we would have been talking about baseball this Sunday, and, you know, unfortunately, we're still dealing with our own cases of COVID, and, you know, right now it's really hard for me to determine what our next steps are going to look like. We're awaiting test results from yesterday. Should get those later today, and maybe that'll help give us some direction. But fingers crossed we have no more positives, and we can maybe take a step forward. But, you know, I can only imagine from our fans to, you know, people that work with the Cardinals that, you know, this is just a frustrating time. And with everything going on in the world, you know, something having like baseball to be able to tune into is not an option. And, you know, that's unfortunate. So, you know, I'd like to sit here and tell you everything's going to be great and there's no concerns moving forward. I'm just not in that position yet to do that. And so, you know, having a little hope, having a little optimism is all that I ask.
Absolutely. Well, you have a huge fan base, and that's a lot of people that could provide some positive energy if they can send it your way to try to push you through this. I know this is hard, and we're not – I'll ask you about scheduling here in just a moment because I know that you have a big task ahead of you. But I think that first and foremost on your mind is just the families and the people in your family, your Cardinals family. That is – of the utmost importance. We did have Mike Schilt on last hour. He did share with us that some people in the organization are dealing with symptoms to the point where some, not that anything is critical or overnight stays or anything like that, but some people have received some IVs just because the symptoms kind of come and go. And some others I know have been asymptomatic. It has been not an easy thing to go through. This virus is silent, and it's, in your case, has spread very quickly, and we see it all over the country and the world, John.
Well, that's right. And, you know, the group that's been so stressed in all of this is our medical team. And, you know, because normally when something happens to a player, there's some resolution, whether, hey, you're going to be out 2 weeks, whether you're going to be out a month, whether you're day-to-day, you know, like we sort of can manage that. But what the St. Louis Cardinals are learning is, like much of our country's learning and really the world's learning, is there's so many things we don't know about this virus. And, you know, we're trying to learn as quickly as we can. But it's not that we lack intelligence. It's just some of the things that we're trying to understand or have appreciation for are still not known to experts. And so it's really hard to make a definitive roadmap on where we're going and what we're doing, because there's still a lot of questions. And the unknown is probably the trickiest thing to deal with. And, you know, now that we've seen it up close, I can understand why there's so many people that have been suffering throughout our country, throughout the world, and it's a really hard illness to manage. And so, you know, we're going to keep trying to marshal through this, but, you know, we still have a lot of question marks moving forward.
I have not received any official notice about tomorrow's game. I know there have been reports about tomorrow's postponement. What I've been telling people on this station is we will wait for an official word on this series and beyond, because that's...
Yeah, always a good idea. The rumor mill concerning the Cardinals has been, you know, in full force over the last week and a half. And I think the easiest thing to say, and look, if I had something to share, I'd share it. But right now, we don't know what tomorrow will bring. I have a meeting later today, which will probably give us a lot more clarity on what everything looks like. But I'm not going to speculate at that, because I'm still trying to collect information before I even go into that. And so, you know, ultimately, once we have something to share, we're going to do it. Where this is not like, you know, trying to make a trade or, you know, trying to recruit a free agent and I'm trying to do it secretively. It's just there's so many moving parts. I don't want to get out in front of it. I think Major League Baseball doesn't want to have to keep hitting the reset button either. So, I mean, there's a lot of things that go into it. And so I just ask for people's patience. I think for the most part, our fan base is willing to do that. And hopefully people understand that this is just something that we're trying to navigate as best we can with not a lot of expertise.
Totally understand and exactly right. And, you know, here's the other thing is that, you know, in the interest of privacy, I've been very hesitant to ask anything about health also beyond general health and what's going on with the team, because you have, these are people, and whether it's players or staff members that are going through things, there are families involved. This is you've had certain people give you permission to give their names out there. There's a lot going on. There's contact tracing happening. It is it's a serious issue and something to be sensitive there about as well.
Yeah, the one thing I've learned through this whole thing is I'm shocked at how much shaming can happen to someone that gets COVID. I mean, I like, it's not even like something I can relate to. It's mind-blowing to me, like how people want to look down at someone because they caught an invisible disease that's a global pandemic. Like, none of this should be a surprise to anybody in the sense that it can happen to anybody. And then for people to want to point fingers, condemn, and really put people that are sick in a bad place is just, I mean, I find it extraordinarily frustrating. Obviously, in my role right now, I'm trying to navigate, A, what we're going to look like tomorrow, but B, my heart goes out to people that are sick with this, not only on the Cardinals team, but just in general, because it's not a pleasant thing to go through. And, you know, people that are asymptomatic, good for them, and they're lucky, and I hope they stay that way.
As for moving forward, again, there is no answer right now because you don't know what your situation is. It's going hour by hour. It does seem like a lot. You've only played 5 games. You have 60 total, 55 games in X however many days once we determine what this week looks like. But you are trying to get to this afternoon, I would imagine, at this point.
Well, right now, all I can do is wait. As I mentioned earlier, we should get some results later today. That will be factored into, you know, really what we decide is our next best step. But, you know, there's a lot of lessons to be learned from the last time we went through this now. And, you know, can we incorporate some of that to help make better decisions? I think that's what we have to do. But, you know, have touch base with some players. I mean, there's a lot of anxiety on what's going to happen next, you know, what to expect. And so we're trying to be as transparent as possible internally just to keep things going. But, you know, candidly, everything I've just shared with you, that's all I've been able to share with players at this point. So there's nothing we're hiding from. It's just a matter of trying to understand when we have confidence to regather as a group, will we feel safe?
There will be a time where you and I on this show will be talking about roster moves and pitching and hitting and situational hitting and all kinds of things. And we will get to that time. We will talk baseball again. But right now, dealing with a global pandemic, and John Mozeliak, you've always been very kind to do this, to come on the show and take the time to do it. And we really appreciate it.
Well, that's my job, and
yes, sir.
Happy to do it. And let's keep our fingers crossed. We get some good news, and here's to better days.
Yes, sir. We'll stay in touch with you. Thank you.
Thank you.
John Mozeliak, Cardinals President of Baseball Operations. It's 11:41. Dan Reardon joins us on the PGA Championship. Final round today. It's actually going on right now. We'll track Tiger Woods, see how he's doing. He's way off the lead. Dustin Johnson going after his second major. First one was back in 2016. Dan Reardon is next on KMOX.
From KMOX Sports,
here's the pitch. Welcome back to the Lux Calore International Sports on a Sunday morning.
Oh, yeah.
On America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
It's 11:45. We're dealing with some pretty heavy stuff here on Sports on a Sunday morning. We did have some fun with Mike Schill talking about his favorite baseball memory. That was a fun story to wrap up on his birthday, but some heavy stuff. And just to kind of get you up to date, and then we're going to go right to Dan Reardon here, who's standing by. Mike Schill telling us that right now the players are all isolated. They are awaiting the next word. There is no official word yet on this upcoming series with the Pirates. John Mozeliak telling us that it depends on the results of tests yesterday, and there's also testing going on today. In fact, Schilt himself was driving down to go get tested as he was doing the show. Schilt also sharing with us that there are some people in the organization who do have symptoms who have required IVs in the ER. No, nothing critical, no overnight stays or anything like that, but they are receiving fluids because symptoms are coming and going and changing and rotating and making those individuals uncomfortable. So overall, receiving great care and everybody moving forward, but he did share that with us, and our hearts go out to the Cardinals as they deal with 16 positive cases here of COVID-19. Joining us to talk some golf is Dan Reardon, who is covering the PGA Championship remotely. Our golf editor has covered well over 100 majors. What's the number at now? And then you do add this one to your list, Dan Reardon.
Yeah, I don't know if this counts.
I'm
not on site. But, you know, I would have to look at the figure. I think it's, if you count the seniors and the women, it's probably around 120, but I haven't checked that recently. I'm It's somewhere in that neighborhood.
It's different, though, isn't it? So you're covering this one remotely. How does that work? And by the way, we would have been, all of us would have been there at the PGA Championship this year, covering as we have with Entercom and our great sponsor, National Car Rental, the last two at Belrive and Bethpage. But because of COVID-19, no fans there and everything else and restrictions, we did call it off. But what is it like covering remotely, Dan?
Well, the PGA of America has done a wonderful job of creating a media hub for people like myself, and very few people were invited to attend. I mean, it's a very small contingent on site. So, I mean, literally, I have access to the interview room. I can ask questions if I choose to do so. I get all the statistical data. I think the liability for me in this particular case is Harding Park is a new venue for me. So I'm relying on television, and you lose the sense of elevation and some of those kinds of things. You know, if this is a golf major that I had been to before, I probably could speak a little more authoritatively than I have been doing this week.
Dustin Johnson leads. He's 9-under for the championship. He is one major. He has one, and that was in 2016, the U.S. Open, Dan. He's been knocking on the door. Last year at Bethpage, he gave Brooks Koepka a little run there late.
Yeah, you know, the interesting thing about DJ is that he's lost more majors than he's won, and I guess that would be the concern going into today's round. Going back to 2010, where he had the very unfortunate final day, but that was a very young Dustin Johnson. But I'm thinking back to specifically to the disappointment he had at Whistling Straits when he was penalized after the round, the three-putt at Chambers Bay when Jordan Spieth won the U.S. Open. So DJ has been a little bit star-crossed in terms of his performance in majors, even throwing in the fact that he slipped and hurt himself at Augusta the day before the championship. So, you know, I'm a little uncomfortable with DJ in the lead only because, like I said, his history is less predictable than you might want out of a guy that has won on the professional tour every year that he's been out there.
What about Tiger Woods? Well, he had two birdies back-to-back on 4 and 5 and trying to make some sort of a charge here on Sunday. He's got a long way to go to catch DJ, but just to trying to get a strong finish would be nice for him moving forward.
Yeah, I think Tiger is trying to make a charge into the FedEx playoffs more than anything else right now. I think Tiger knew by Friday afternoon that he was probably not going to win his 16th major, and that would have to come at Wingfoot or at Augusta in the future. But if he gets a momentum off of Sunday's round, you know, I tweeted out earlier in the week saying that, you know, Tiger had played 4 rounds of golf in 5 months' time, and physically he's great, and he's worked on all elements of the game, but I don't think mentally he was prepared to play in this championship as well as he might have been. Tiger's great coming off of the layoff. We've seen that when he was younger, but I sort of think not being tested over 4 days for a number of weeks is a big difference. And I'll even speculate that, you know, he's gotten a little better today, maybe because he's accustomed to playing, you know, 5 hours or 4 hours on a golf course and having to think his way all the way around the course.
In between there are some big names as well. Bryson DeChambeau, Brooks Koepka, the two-time PGA champion back-to-back. Can he win 3 in a row? I wouldn't count him out whatsoever. Chris Raby picked Colin Morikawa to win, and that's a nice pick from Cal Berkeley. He's right in there.
I like Morikawa. And what I'll tell you what I like about the top of the leaderboard, Tom, is we have a sharp contrast between golf styles. We have Dustin Johnson. We have Cameron Champ. We have Brooks Koepka, guys that bomb the ball, guys who are going to go for the sharp par fours with the driver or the three wood in their hand. And then we have Scottie Scheffler, and we have Paul Casey, and we have Colin Morikawa. And those are guys that work their way around the golf course. And those are the top six names on the leaderboard. So what wins out in this circumstance? Some golf courses will dictate that. I can tell you the golf course is still fog shrouded again today. It'll probably get a little better as the day wears on and then get very chilly for the leaders when they finish. I always favor the player over the bomber in these circumstances. And I look carefully at the hole locations to see what the situation might be. And I'll tell you this, Tom, Kerry Hay has tucked the pins virtually everywhere on this golf course. And if anybody goes out flag hunting, they better be really, really accurate to pull it off. I go back to 2002. Tiger in the U.S. Open at Bethpage Black was the leader. He went out and pulled back his distance off the tee, played to the middle of the greens when he didn't have a green light to go at the flag, and said, come and get me. And nobody came and got him. And I look for somebody today to do that. I'm not saying even par out of one of these leaders is going to win this championship. But I think discretion is more important today than perhaps it has been in recent majors because of the nature of this golf course. The rough is very, very unpredictable, and we've had a different overnight leader all 3 days, which suggests to me that nobody has figured out this thing. And so Morikawa would be a fun name, and, you know, Scottie Scheffler would be a great name because you'd have to go back to John Daly to find a player who was a rookie and won the PGA Championship in their first attempt.
Look out for that group at 310, Justin Rose and Jason Day, two experienced players right there. Those guys can get after it, too. They could make up some ground. They're only three back.
Yeah, I think the sixes are comfortably in it. I think the fives, the guys at five under, would have to do, and we've seen that every day, though. They would have to do what somebody has done every day. They'd have to go out and shoot the 64 or 65. If somebody in that group, you know, whether it's Tony Finau, who's far enough back, or they're at six, but Wolf or Shoffley, one of those guys go out there and throw a 65 at the field and say, you know, I'm in the clubhouse. Let's see what happens. The last time we saw something like that take place, it took place basically across the lake from where they are right now, Merced. If you went across Merced, you were at Olympic Club, and we saw there that Webb Simpson got in early and waited for the rest of the field to come to him, and they never came to. But I think the fives are going to have to shoot an electric number to get into the championship. But the sixes on up are very much in this affair.
2 years ago at Belle Reve, my daughter came out over the weekend, and she just wanted to see Justin Rose. She said, that's my favorite player. I said, why do you like Justin Rose so much? She said, because he smiles a lot. I like that. But it was fun, wasn't it? Belle Reve was awesome. I mean, just think about that, Dan. That was just 2 years ago. That was the opposite of social distancing. We were jammed in there, a raucous crowd. Do the players still talk about that, Dan? I mean, is there still a vibe throughout the PGA Tour about what happened at Belle Reve?
Well, it's definitely a vibe on the PGA Tour because I think the tour is looking for an opportunity to get back to Belle Reve. And I said a couple of weeks ago, I think with the with this event taking place now at Harding Park and the opening that the President's Cup has moved off of Harding Park in 2026, which will actually be 27 with it, I think there is a vibe there. And to answer your question, as far as specific players, Tiger has referenced it in the past that he thought that was a big launch for him. And obviously, if Koepka wins today, you talk three in a row. Well, you got to get to one in a row before you can get to three in a row. And Koepka said, you know, he didn't get it done at the U.S. Open last year at Pebble Beach. He'd like to get it done this week and get the three in a row. So, yeah, it's still part of the conversation. But more than that, it's part of the business model. I think St. Louis is very much on the map. And Belle Reve has been, the greens have all been redone. They're ready to host something in the future.
Can't wait for that, I hope, and wait to see how that comes about. And then too bad to hear about the Ascension Charity Classic. I know that Worldwide Technology and Emerson had jumped in there as sponsors, as Ascension had its name on the tournament at Norwood Hills. They had to shut that one down, Dan.
Yeah, and you know, it's coincidentally, I talked to somebody at the beginning of the week, and I said, I wish they would just make the decision. They're going to lose a lot of money. They're going to lose galleries. They're going to lose everything by trying to get this done on time. I think it's a brilliant decision on their part. It gives them one additional year. It gives them a little earlier date on the calendar. I believe they go to September, early in September instead of late September, early October. I just didn't think there was anything to be gained by holding an event where you didn't have galleries, where you may not have media, and you're just getting it launched. I think you're better off launching in the best of circumstances rather than the worst of circumstances.
Well, I appreciate you. It's always great to chat with you. The leaders, Dustin Johnson is the leader, and he goes off at 3:50 this afternoon. So if you like primetime golf, this is your day. And I would raise my hand. I am in that category. It's just nice to talk about something other than coronavirus. And to be able to watch competitive golf is a lot of fun. And I look forward to that a little bit later today. Dan, it's always great to chat with you. We go way back, the KMOX Golf Show. This is a little snippet of what we used to do back in the day.
And enjoyed it, Tom.
Always enjoy being with you. There's Dan Reardon, our KMOX golf editor, with us as he covers the PGA Championship remotely. It's at Harding Park. Our old friend Barry Deitch is running that tournament. He's the PGA Championship director from Belle Reve. They rotate. Once he finished with Belle Reve, he started the planning for San Francisco. And we wish him the best. Too bad they couldn't have fans there, but that is the case throughout sports for the most part. Thanks to our producer, James O'Sullivan. If you would like to listen to anything from this show, all you need to do is go to radio.com. The radio.com app on your phone has a rewind feature. You can listen to everything from Mike Schilt at 10:15 to John Mozeliak at 11:30. I'm Tom Ackerman. Thanks for joining us on KMOX.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.